Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of On Air with the Chair. I'm your MEC Chairman, Captain Adam Spurrier, and joining me later today will be Endeavor Air COO Brian Darsow. Before we get to that part of the segment today, I'm sitting down with Communications Committee Chairman, Captain Derek Lagasse. Derek?
Thanks again for having me, Adam. It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely, Derek. It's been a little while since we've sat down. I believe the last on-air that we put out was actually the live stream component back in the fall, where we covered essentially a State of the Union of the current MEC. And the last podcast before that would have been a similar topic, State of the Union of Summer 2023.
So some time has passed, Adam, since summer of 2023. What's been going on lately here at Endeavor and in the union?
Well, since the last time we sat down, Derek, there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes happenings inside of the MEC, but not all too much on a forward-facing side. One of the focal points for the MEC in 2023 was continuing to advocate for an advanced seniority and longevity system at Delta Airlines. We've heard through feedback from our pilots at LEC meetings, talking to people out on the line, that there's a continuing pressure of our pilots to go to a carrier and establish a seniority number sooner, which is something they can't yet obtain while at Endeavor outside of taking the flow program to Delta. We've tried to be as transparent as we can through that process, whether it's through a chairman's update, through questions on our last On Air with the Chair live stream, but ultimately we haven't been able to succeed in reaching that goal at this point in time. There's been a little bit of a sea change in the regional industry where we've seen less movement or less negotiations happening at a regional level on the heels of the significant packages that we had in 2022 and the mainline carriers reaching their new contracts in 2023. For a lot of our On Air with the Chair podcasts, they tend to revolve around a specific agreement that we're working on inside of the MEC. But until the passing of LOA 140 just a couple weeks ago, it was a pretty quiet time from the last LOA for the third gen iPads that happened late summer 2023.
Well, Adam, from parsing through the most recent LOA, I have noticed that that really doesn't have anything to do with that goal of seniority and longevity. Where did the idea for this most recent LOA come from, and how exactly did that negotiation go?
Well, parsing is a pretty big word, but luckily I'm following along with what you're getting at there, Derek. From a background standpoint, LOA 140 is closing out some areas that we didn't quite address when we changed the pay rates as a whole back during LOAs 134 and 135.
So it's kind of a continuation of some loose ends from that negotiation.
Exactly. Even though we have a main set of negotiating priorities, which includes seniority and longevity at Delta, our MEC has always taken the philosophy that we won't pass up on the opportunity to take other interim bargaining steps towards strengthening our contract as a whole. The main focus of LOAs 134 and 135 was to correct those pay rates and bring us back in parity with our industry competitors, the other fee-for-departure carriers. And by trying to keep a rapid pace for those negotiations, inevitably something got missed during that process, and it happened to be this change to our disability benefits at Endeavor.
So wait, Adam, how do pay rates affect disability benefits?
Essentially, over time, as we've made other modifications to our pay rates, we've made equitable increases to our long-term disability benefit, and that was missed during this last large negotiation cycle. Previously, we had a cap or a maximum benefit that you could get per month on loss of license and long-term disability of $6,000 per month, which was then increased to $7,000 towards the end of 2019. Reasonably so, when we almost doubled pay rates for our first officers, as well as a significant increase for our captains, there should have been some amount of movement to that disability cap this time around. With everything else going on with trying to meet deadlines and get those pay rates into pilots' pockets sooner, this was one area a little bit more removed in the contract that was not addressed that first time around. Contractually, we have a required sit-down, so to speak, with our company every year to go over the benefits that our pilots will have for the next calendar year or the next plan year. It was that point in the fall of 2023 where we realized the disparity of how many of our captains were now meeting that cap much sooner than they should have. For example, before the pay rates changed, it was only a very senior contingent of our pilots that ever came close to that $7,000 cap. After the significant increases that we had to our pay scales, first officers were getting much further towards reaching that maximum benefit, and even a year one pay step for a captain was maximizing that $7,000 benefit. And the way that's calculated is you take 60% of 80 hours, which works out to 48 hours of pay.
So I guess under old language, the vast majority of our pilots would not meet this cap. But now under the new pay rates, a large number of pilots wouldn't be able to get the full benefit that they would normally be entitled to.
That's exactly right. We went from a system where only a small percentage maximized that benefit or came close to it, and now every single captain right out of the gate was already taking the maximum benefit, with some more senior FOs coming close to it as well.
That sounds like quite the loose end, Adam. Glad we got that addressed. So how exactly do the improvements in LOA 140 affect our pilots today?
While the most noticeable impact would come from that change in the maximum disability benefit, we were able to secure some smaller benefits for our pilot group as well. In addition to that main benefit of LOA 140 with the increased disability cap, we also made some modifications to the language around eligibility for our loss of license and long-term disability programs. Previously, there was some language that was a little bit more broad or open-ended as far as what would make a pilot eligible for their loss of license pay. And over the last few years, we've ran into occasional issues with our disability providers where pilots were being denied benefits that they otherwise should be getting. Rather than have the MEC need to file grievances on these items going forward, the contract language is now more clear regarding loss of license to avoid an incorrect denial of benefits in the first place. It can be sometimes difficult talking about insurance or loss of license, as that's an area that hopefully most of our pilots will never need to run into. But for anyone who's been on loss of license or disability before, you know just how valuable it is to have that continued income while you're working on your medical recertification.
That's a really great point, Adam. It should come naturally to pilots that we should always be prepared for the worst possible scenario, even if we're hoping for blue skies and tailwinds ahead.
On the topic of blue skies, tailwinds, and happy life events, another change that we made with LOA 140 is some expansion of our maternity benefits, as well as a unpaid parental bonding benefit with this agreement. Going into negotiations, we had some language on hand from Delta's latest agreement, where they were able to significantly capture additional improvements when it comes to maternity benefits, bonding leave, and parental leave. The original language that's been in our JCBA goes back to pre-Endeavor times in Masaba's contract and is a little bit out of date when it comes to the process of a pilot starting their maternity leave or informing the company that they are pregnant. The first set of changes that we made was around that language, modernizing it, and borrowing some ideas from Delta's latest contract. In addition to that, we were able to secure bonding leave for our pilots, which is up to 12 months of unpaid leave covering birth, adoption, guardianship, or fostering of a child. So it's no longer just the pilot who's giving birth who potentially has that benefit, but also if you're a pilot who's had one of those life events in your family not impacting you directly, you can still take that unpaid leave. There's a few conditions that have to be met for taking that unpaid leave, such as using a portion of your FMLA leave already, having the leave taken in one single consecutive period, and that the leave must be concluded within 12 months of the life event, such as that birth, fostering, adoption, or guardianship of the child. Again, we borrowed pretty heavily from the Delta PWA language for this leave of absence, which was a twofold decision. The first being that we've seen it work pretty well down in Atlanta for our mainline counterparts. And the second being that if a lot of Endeavor pilots have the end goal of transitioning to Delta, they're not relearning two different programs. You know how it works at Endeavor, and you take that knowledge with you when you transition to Delta down the road. The one part of this agreement that we weren't able to secure and wanted to from the Delta PWA is what's known as paid parental leave. Essentially, what those pilots at Delta have is a up to 14-day period where you are company paid for taking that leave of absence, and then from there you can optionally transition to that unpaid leave of absence. However, if you're looking through the LOA, you'll notice that we did get an agreement with the company to circle back on those items before the next benefits discussion taking place in the fall of 2024. Typically in our LOAs at Endeavor, you won't see language talking about a future agreement or a commitment to negotiate down the line. But during this last LOA, it seemed like both sides had an interest in ultimately reaching that goal. We just needed more information, costing, what the impact will be on the pilot group, and some better fact-finding before moving ahead with that. As we wanted to make sure that we got this disability benefit in place for more pilots before the plan year took off running ahead of us in 2024, we decided to put that part of the paid leave on the back burner and get the majority of these benefits in place sooner for our pilot group. The last part of this LOA covers those pilots who are out on leaves of absence right now, on or after the date that our pay rates were changed, going back to October 1st of 2022. Generally, in the insurance world, you don't see retroactive benefits of any kind, and our disability provider, MetLife, was only willing to go back to July of 2023 to true up those pilots who are on a leave of absence right now for disability. I have to give credit where it's due, and the company ended up going the extra mile for these pilots who've been out on or after our pay rate changes in 2022 and are going to true those pilots up out of their own pocket on the loss of license payments. This was something both sides felt was the right thing to do in the long run, as if the pay rates had been caught during the rest of negotiations, those pilots would never be in the hole, so to speak, to begin with. So at the end of the day, it gets everybody to the position they would have been in had this been caught back at the fall of 2022 negotiations.
Great. That seems to cover what was settled on in LOA 140 pretty well, Adam. Has the MEC been up to anything else in the past couple months?
No, outside of LOA 140 and then the continued background discussions with the Delta MEC on trying to advance our collective goals or our strategic goals when it comes to seniority and seeing those Endeavor pilots come to Delta, a lot of what the MEC's worked on has been training or preparedness for the future of our organization. There's been a lot of training taking place at ELPA National over the last few months. For example, we actually sent you out to a strategic preparedness committee training. We've sent our PBS folks out for training in DC. Some of our negotiators went to a seminar. And we actually just the other week sent our new incoming LEC reps out to get trained in DC and do sort of a ELPA 101 workshop with the other incoming reps. As you hear from the MEC in most of our communications, including the tail end of every Friday hotline that we send out to the pilot group, there's a strong need for additional volunteers in the MEC's future. And part of that is building up our bench before we lose some of the key players. For example, we heard at our last MEC meeting the forecast of a couple key committees on their turnover, such as a new grievance committee chair, outgoing members of our communications committee, and planned turnover on the security and PBS committees.
Absolutely, Adam. That's been a sentiment parroted both internally at our MEC meeting and really industry-wide talking to our peers at the Strategic Preparedness Conference. It sounded like we did some strategic planning and other exercises at the MEC meeting. Can you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, absolutely. Most MEC meetings, we look at strategic preparedness from a top-end objective level, where our negotiating committee will work with the reps to determine the priorities from the pilot group, look over previous survey data, and go through what the focus or what the broader objectives of the MEC should be going forward. This meeting, we took a little bit different direction with strategic planning, and we're able to collaborate with our GO team representatives at ELPA National to have a national strat planning committee member come in and work with our MEC to build up that toolbox on strat planning as a whole. With how much turnover our MEC's had over the last couple of years, the last time we did a formal workshop like that was May of 2022. And going back to that last session 18 months ago, we only have one sitting LEC rep who was both at this current meeting and at that last meeting, in addition to the MEC officers. With how much continued change there is in the industry, as well as going into another board of directors year this fall, we thought it was important to get that foundation back in place for our current reps and set ourselves up for success later this year. While we worked on that towards the tail end of the MEC meeting, we did hear earlier in the week from several committee chairs in addition to our executive leadership. For those who follow along at home with the MEC meetings, every day we put out a short daily update when we break for each day of what the MEC's worked on, who some of the speakers were, and what topics were covered. On the executive session days, we also always include some notes of the open session topics and questions that are asked by our LEC reps, which draw from the questions that we get out on the line from the pilot group.
So speaking of the management session, did you gain any interesting insights from the management panel as they responded to the questions from the line?
From an MEC standpoint, I'd say nothing that necessarily reinvented the wheel for things that we've heard from our executives in the past. But we also have a little bit more frequent communication with that leadership team than most of our line pilots likely would. One of those most frequent questions we've been getting from the line recently has had to do with the hiring shifts at Delta that are taking place in 2024. Our LEC reps did ask that question to Jim Graham, and his answer was that while it's a little early on in the year to know definitively what's going to happen with Delta's hiring, it does look like they will be having a modest pullback from that nearly 2,500 number that we saw last year in 2023. While that number could change by the time the year gets over, it's been penciled in publicly somewhere in that 1,000 to 1,200 pilot range. With the big question on our pilots' minds being, what impact does this have on our flow to Delta? When we talk about the flow, we have to break it down both in terms of the current LOA 125 flow and the future flow program, the CAP, which was established through LOA 129. While they have similar parameters for moving pilots to Delta, there are slightly different conditions which have to be met. Under the current flow program, it's sort of a captain for a day approach where you get your flow letter as long as you qualify as a captain, but you don't have a set amount of time served, like the 24 months you need in the left seat as a CAP pilot. There's also slight differences when it comes to the number of pilots that they're obligated to take under one program versus the other. For example, under the CAP, the minimum number of pilots that we'll send each month will be the lesser or the smaller of 20 or 50% of what Delta's hiring that month. What that means is under the CAP is if Delta hires 50 pilots, for example, we'll be sending at least 20. However, if Delta only hired 30 pilots that month, under the CAP, we would be sending 15. This differs from the original flow program, which we're under right now, where we're entitled to the first 20 new positions each month, as long as Delta's offering those positions. What this means is that if Delta wanted to, they could offer flow-only classes this summer, where you would see those 20 pilots transitioning over to Delta, and those could be the only pilots coming onto the seniority list. Likewise, if Delta chose to only hire 10 pilots a month for whatever reason later this year, all 10 of those spots would have to go to Endeavor pilots under LOA 125. It seems like we're pretty much out of the woods when it comes to any concerns about the flow program slowing down this year, but there is a lot of calendar year left. Just this week, we saw the May 2024 seniority group go out, who will be attending INDOC down in Atlanta in August of 2024, meaning that even if Delta potentially decides to not hire other pilots this summer, our flow pilots are already penciled in to head down for INDOC in May, June, July, and August as of just this week. As such, even if there's a slowdown in hiring, or if Delta decides to send more of their sim instructors back to the line, we've already carved out a majority of those months in which there could potentially be a slowdown. Of course, nobody's crystal ball is perfect. Something could still change later this year. One of those classes could get delayed and the holdback is moved back further in the year and that seniority date changes. But it seems like for the time being that both Endeavor and Delta want to continue to meet that 20 pilot a month commitment through the flow program. With the continued attrition that we've seen at Endeavor over the last couple years, our pilot groups plateaued around the 1500 to 1550 pilot mark, which means that a pilot hired today, if no pilots senior to them leave outside the flow, should be heading to Delta in about 5.5 years. When we aren't quite sure what the future might hold as far as Delta's hiring goes, those two flow programs give a good amount of career stability to someone coming in the door at Endeavor today, even though a high-time FO right now or a junior captain might have more lucrative opportunities by going somewhere else at this point in time. We try and cover as much information as we can from these MEC meetings through our Friday ELPA hotlines, through live streams, these On Air with the Chair podcasts, but a underutilized opportunity that our pilots have is to actually attend those MEC meetings in person. A majority of our MEC business is conducted in open session, and I think across maybe 13 MEC meetings or so now that I've attended, I want to say just twice that I can think of have we had a pilot actually come in during open session to address the MEC in that forum. Not only is this an opportunity to directly reach your representatives, but it's a good way to hear those questions and answers directly that our management is providing to our reps. That takes out one of those steps in that game of telephone when you want to get updated information about what's going on at this company. Right now, at the time of recording, we're still costing out our next MEC meeting in May between the Cincinnati market and going to New York City, where so many of our pilots are on a day-to-day basis. And we'd like to hold a pub event in conjunction with that meeting to catch more of you out in person and have the reps come to you. In the meantime, however, as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, we'll be sitting down in just a minute here with COO Brian Darsow to talk more about the current status of Endeavor and some of those other updates that we got from our execs at the MEC meeting.
Very good. All of this and more coming up next on Air with the Chair. We'll be right back.
And we're back with COO Brian Darsow. Brian, for those of us who've been around Endeavor for a little bit longer, we remember you from your original time here with us. But for anyone who's newer to the airline, you might be an unfamiliar face after coming back from Delta Connection. Feel free to give us a quick rundown on your history with Endeavor and where you fit into the Endeavor family.
Awesome. Good morning. Yeah, thanks for having me. So as you mentioned, spent a few years back in the day, started with Endeavor back in 2013. Spent a little time with Tech Ops, most of my time as the Vice President of Finance, and then the last couple of years working for Delta Connection, basically overseeing SkyWest and Republic primarily. There's obviously less work to do in the relationship with Endeavor. So I got a real good chance to see, you know, how SkyWest and Republic kind of approach their operations kind of relative to Endeavor. And so when Philip Underwood decided to announce his retirement and move on, I said, hey, there's might be a real good opportunity to come back and join my family here in Minneapolis. So super excited to be back. Obviously a very different role for me as the COO versus the being in finance. But the one cool thing with being in the finance role is you work with everybody in the company. You're involved with pretty much everything that's going on with the company. And so very familiar with the management team, very familiar with most of the leaders, and quite familiar with our culture and where we're at as a company. So it was super exciting for me to come back and join the Endeavor team. You know, like I've told many people, after seeing the SkyWest team and the Republic team, and to be honest, to seeing the inner workings at Delta, I can think of nowhere else I'd rather be than back with Endeavor.
Well, great. It's always good seeing a familiar face come back to Endeavor, especially after getting that outside experience in Delta Connection as a whole. As many of our pilots know, 2022 was a challenging year for the operation. Wasn't our best summer on record. We got a little behind on upgrades, a little behind the power curve as a whole as an airline, but we made a lot of progress in 2023 trying to better that for our work groups. Can you talk what hand you had in things or what experience you saw in 2023 after coming back to Endeavor?
You bet. Yeah, I start with where I was at. You know, so I spent the last couple of years at Delta Connection, really through that late 21, 22, and the summer, the struggle, right? So you had COVID basically 2020, 2021, and then really everyone wanted to fly in 2022. And Delta, along with every other airline, tried to get all the metal, everything back in the air immediately. And it turned into an extremely painful summer because we didn't know how to walk, let alone run as an airline. Not only Endeavor, the regionals, all the majors, but literally every airport, ATC, the entire system just struggled through the ramp up and getting back to what it meant to run the airlines for the entire world. And so 22 was a real struggle and eye-opening to, especially to Delta, right? And how much they book, right? How much they sell. And then the same thing for Endeavor was, okay, we've got to do this right. We've got to be very measured in our growth and our operations and protect the operations. For Endeavor also, it was a very big transition to us because if you remember through COVID, we were real light in New York. We basically pulled up a lot of our operation out of New York, very Atlanta-centric. That flip-flopped as we transitioned again. And so 2022 also was painful for Endeavor because all of a sudden we're back to New York, helping with the slot protections and the slot waivers at Delta, right, in 2022. And then 40% of our flying tied to JFK and LaGuardia. And so we as an airline had kind of extra special challenge in dealing with that at a time when the whole kind of industry is coming back. And then you roll into 23. Okay, we've done the summer of 22. We actually had a decent winter, started with a challenging January in 2023, and then we started to get our feet underneath us. And so when you look at how we measure our, you know, the key performance metrics that we measure every month, completion factor, A0, 3+ hour delays, and then our NPS scores, right, for our OPRs, right, 4 every month, struggled in January. Then we went into a streak where we hit something like we missed like 2 out of the next 5 months. Really good momentum building out of 22 into 23. And you'll hear me talk about this, you know, on this podcast. And then I think everyone in the office is sick of hearing me talk about building that momentum around what we can control. And so really good airline operating. And then the summer hit us again. And the ATC challenges in New York were still prevalent in 2023. And of course, with us there in New York, Delta uses us as a shock absorber for them. So we'd protect Delta through those storms to help protect the maximum number of customers. And so for us, the second thing I'll mention is resiliency. So if you think momentum, what we can control, building momentum each year, getting better, you know, getting our legs underneath us, running faster. Resiliency is about that being ready for those summer storms, being ready for the winter storms. And how do we best fly through a summer IROP so that we can recover quickly, reset crews, reset the airline for the next day so we have the minimal amount of impact. And so we had another challenging summer, but it was light years better than 2022. And then as we rolled into the fall, September hit us with a tough, very tough 4-day IROP. I'm sure almost everyone will remember the tough 4-day IROP. It literally wiped out all 4 OPRs for the month of September. You follow September up with the fourth quarter, 12 out of 12 for the OPR results in the fourth quarter. So that momentum that we built and then being ready for the winter storms, not without challenges through the holidays, still tight on staffing in a lot of departments, but we're learning to run the airline in a really good fashion again. And in fact, if you think about some of the performance scores, GIR, ODI, record-setting year for us with a couple of our safety metrics, FSI was better year over year, and then aircraft damage is the one we still struggle with. It's probably, if you look at the airline system, all of the airports struggling with retraining, hiring, training crew, ground employees, et cetera. So that one we were about flat, but again, record-setting performance for Endeavor of 10-year history. And then when you look at like D0, A0, record-setting A0, D0, if you kind of forget about 2020, 2021, the COVID years. So we've built this momentum. We've started on this path of resiliency. I think it showed most of the time through the summer, but it wasn't without challenges. We certainly had our challenges. And so as we look into 24, it's really about, okay, continue to build on the momentum, but then how do we set, you know, and work on the resiliency as we get into the, you know, like the storms we just had in January, right? We still pulled out 2 of 4 for January. We're 4 of 4 for the month of February. But how do we get ready for that summer to basically take care of all of our employees, take care of the airline? And I think the last thing I'll mention relative to the path we're on around that, that building back is, I talk about all of our work groups working harmoniously together. I mean, you talk about running an airline and getting our airline back on its feet. It's also getting the familiarity with all of our work groups and you know, supporting each other. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about some of that as we get into some of the questions. So long-winded answer, but really passionate and excited about where 23 went from a performance. Obviously, 24 still will have ATC challenges. We will still do a lot of flying in New York. We do it well. And I'm really excited about, you know, that resiliency we're building into 2024. So
you speak on the momentum that we built in 2023, the performance of the airline and how that's changed over time. Where do you see that setting us up for success going into 2024?
So I'm going to circle back to 2023 for a second, because one of the things that really set us up for success in 2024 is the size of our airline. So if you think about, we've had high attrition in multiple work groups, including pilots, right? And so the airline is no longer defined by the number of aircraft it has. It's defined by how big are your work groups. And to be honest, for us, the bottleneck is the captains, right? And so in 2023, right, if you think about the momentum coming out of 2022, where we did the LOA in the late 2022, Delta got their agreement done in early 2023, and we started to see some positive signs for our attrition and to be honest, to attract some of the direct entry captains, right? And so we did this in 2023, and we were able to, so if you think about, we expected to shrink in 2023 the number of aircraft we could fly and the number of block hours we could produce. Instead, we increased our block hours and number of aircraft quarter by quarter in 2023. So we start in 2024 in a much better spot. That means obviously more jobs for everyone in the company, but it also means 10, 15% more hours that first officers are getting time building their time, right? So if you think about coming out of 23, we're in a much better spot than where the industry was going in 22 and early 23. Now what we're looking at is, what does this mean to Endeavor's network, right? So if you think about it, we're really highly concentrated in New York, and we're sort of accustomed to that, but what we still have this lack of full flying in the Midwest, in Atlanta, Detroit, Minneapolis, and even Cincinnati a little bit. These hubs and crew bases used to be a lot bigger for us. And so as we grow and get more aircraft, more block hours, that's what will fill in for us. As New York sort of is stable for us, and maybe we'll see, you know, as the international comes back for Delta, maybe our presence in New York will slide back a little bit. But we're excited to fill back in the rest of the network, because this means positions in the other hubs. It means a lot more efficiency in how we run our operation. I think even on the maintenance side, right, we used to park X number of aircraft at each of our bases. We've got less aircraft parked at our bases right now. And so trying to work and get that efficiency back as an airline. So that's kind of the 2024 trend as we come out of 23, super excited about how that drives efficiency into the organization. But one of the things I also want to mention was the work that we're doing using theory of constraints to understand the network. And so if you think about this, and I try not to go too deep into this, I'll talk for hours on it, but network drives an airline. And so for us, it's Delta's network and Delta network drives their airline. And it's sort of focused on flight revenue and flight profitability. And oh, by the way, all these inputs like maintenance, where you're going to get aircraft, where your crew staffing is, what bases you're at, they're like inputs, but they're not driving the models. And so what we've had to do is go to Delta and sort of highlight that, hey, if you could listen to our inputs a little bit more, you could, you know, maybe not impact your revenue and profitability, but you could greatly improve our efficiency and build better quality of life for not only pilots, but flight attendants, mechanics, our entire organization. And so we're starting to get the kind of this flip-flop and this momentum behind looking at the network differently than we had in the past. And so what you should see and what you should expect as we go into the summer and the fall is better schedules, better quality of life, again, not only for pilots, but flight attendants, mechanics. And yet we should be able to get better efficiency, more block hours because of it, because it's more efficient flying. And so kind of super excited about it. Delta's even started to look at it for their narrow body aircraft for their flying, instead of having sort of poor schedules because Delta's chasing profitability. So I'm super excited about that. In 24, we'll kind of see how much we get into it. Where the real momentum kicks in is in later in the year in 25, when we build those bases back up. Then, right, then you can start to feel that momentum on our block hours and our growth. And I haven't talked about cost, but basically as we grow, we get real competitive on costs also. So our unit costs start to decrease, which even feeds more potential growth and more opportunity for our airline.
So building off of that increased performance towards the end of 2023, increased block hours, one thing we'd also heard down at the MEC meeting a couple weeks ago was the addition of more middle of the day flights going into these outstations instead of just the first of the day, last of the day type flying. And in all, that's supposed to be building up more time, better schedules to optimize getting FOs into the left seat and helping out captains who feel like their schedules are hitting the red line consistently. So where do you see that bringing our staffing going into 2024, especially the summer, when it comes to getting those first officers into the left seat?
So, yeah, again, if you think about the momentum we built out of 23 and 24, not only is, you know, having enough captains important for the size of our airline, but how do we grow our captain ranks over time, right? And that means taking care of our first officers and getting as many hours to them as efficiently as possible. So the kind of the network schedule not only helps us with captain better flying schedules, et cetera, but also hopefully it helps drive FO building hours a little bit better than we have. I know we've seen sort of a pretty good improvement over the year of 2023 in FO's ability to build time. Right. The challenge for us has been, and I laugh because we started with talking about the last 10 years, is we've talked for years about this nirvana when we get the seats balanced. Right. So 1 or 2 years we're dealing with the imbalance the other way, and then we're building the imbalance the other way. But really, our growth as an airline and our success as an airline, the best thing that we can do is grow FOs so that we can upgrade more than we attrit, so then we can grow. And then as we grow as an airline, that means more captain positions and more FOs building time. And it sort of is like compounding interest. And you look at the forward-looking curves. We're sort of at a real dynamic time in the industry. Obviously, the entire regional industry is facing the same thing. And so we're all sort of racing each other to get back healthy. One of the real challenges for us has been, as we watch attrition and we watch, as I mentioned, the DECs, how many FOs should we carry for the airline? Too many, and then nobody can build time fast enough. Too few, and then we really limit our future. Over time, we've gotten better at managing it, but it's still getting that FO group right-sized for what we know is going on in the industry. Obviously, the flow program we have at Delta is really strong for Endeavor and one of the kind of the best tools for us. Is very predictable. It also helps us with the FO side and understanding how many FOs we should have. And so our challenge throughout 2024 and in 25 is, again, maximizing our ability to grow and generate future training for FOs, et cetera, and continue to build our airline. And to some degree, I think one of your questions will go talk about fleet and so forth, is getting some of our aircraft on park and taking a bigger slice of the pie with the Delta connection flying, if you will.
So speaking of fleet, and for those of us who spend a bit more time in Minneapolis, we've seen that one shiny, gently used 175 parked in front of the Endeavor hangar for a little while now. And it's been a longstanding question on what that fleet composition might look like for Endeavor, or where the Embraer has its place among our CRJ heavy fleet right now. In the near future, it sounds like that aircraft should be certified and fully up and running for Endeavor, or what do we see happening with that airplane?
So I kind of want to bring it back to kind of the whole fleet question before I jump into the E-Jet specifically. But if you think about Delta scope class, 325 dual class aircraft, Delta has looked at that many times through COVID, through the pilot situation, and has reaffirmed the strong interest in maximizing 325. That's great news for Endeavor. That's great news for the regional industry. We can't recover fast enough to get Delta back to the 325. You think about the industry challenges all of the majors are having with engines, airframe deliveries, et cetera, which actually makes, you know, pilot staffing one of the most tricky things, because of the crazy times on the airframe side. But the starting point and the great news is 325 is where Delta wants their scope to be, reaffirming the strength of the regional flying. For us, we would love to be a 200 plus aircraft company, right? It means we flow a lot more pilots. It means we're a lot more efficient. It means we have a lot more to offer our employees in terms of location and where we fly. But we've got to build back up to that almost aircraft by aircraft. We currently have about 12 CRJ-7s and 9s still parked in the desert that we parked obviously through COVID that we haven't had the capacity. We just got approval a week ago to induct the 3-900s. So the momentum we gained in 2023 leads to, okay, now let's go put those 3-900s into our maintenance facility in West Virginia. We will have those later this year. And then we will look to induct the 700s behind it. And our plan currently is sort of, we expect we'll park, you know, sort of two of those at a time. It actually takes about 3 months each to get those unparked, all the maintenance that's required. And we would have that whole fleet sometime ready to go by early next year, early 2025. Our staffing models and all of our outlook of what's going on in the regional industry says as early as early 2025, as late as 2026 for what Endeavor recovery looks like. And so the first point of our recovery is let's get to 141. It's kind of the rally point for our aircraft. Let's get to 141. And I actually should say 142 now that we have the one ERJ, right? So you talk about the Embraer, super exciting. Obviously a year ago when we started down the certification, we know we have to get the certification first. And so we've been lots of teams working very hard to get that certification ready. We're expecting it probably by the end of the first quarter. We've had a few things slip between us and the FAA and getting it done. But obviously getting that certified is first. I would have told you several months ago that behind it, right, we've got to get these 9s and 7s unparked, get healthy, and then the E-Jet is sort of aircraft 142. And then we're in a position to start arguing about 143, 144, et cetera. What I will say is times are so dynamic in the industry right now, and we're starting to see movement and Delta is starting to look at, I'm not only looking at the next couple of years of what I can fly, but what's my 10-year fleet plan? And obviously our fleet being a little older, they're interested in where is our fleet going to go? So the good news for us is they're starting to look at it. They're starting to think of what should our fleet look like? And so when we get to questions of should we be unparking 700s or should we be growing ERJs? So the challenge for us is to start a fleet is sort of inefficient, right? But what we're looking to do is what's the right size to start the E-Jet fleet and maybe start with a base 5 to 10 aircraft and then grow it to 20 to 30 aircraft. When's the right time to do that?
While the exact timing of those aircraft isn't public information through the capacity agreements with Republic and SkyWest, there's some amount of timeline out there on when those aircraft might find their way to Endeavor. From your history with Delta Connection, where do you see that positioning Endeavor to take that additional fleet type on?
I think first and foremost, right, we have to have the aircraft on our certificate. We are in a much stronger position to go negotiate with Delta to ask for aircraft. I think what you'll see, you know, again, still a very dynamic time in the regional industry as everyone is looking to recover their capacity and rationalize their fleets. I think we'll see opportunities back when I was at Delta Connection, right? We do contracts with Republic and SkyWest. It's not one great big contract. It's actually multiple little contracts. So as these contracts and these tranches of aircraft become available for renewal, it puts Delta Connection in a real good spot to have competition. And it puts us in a real good spot with our really good operation. You know, we're very competitive on cost. It really drives an opportunity for us to go and get an E-Jet fleet and be part of that. The other good news is those E-Jets want to be in New York where we do a lot of our flying. So it's really good for us. I think the question won't be if we get E-Jets and where they'll be, it's when do we get them as we get healthy as an airline and compete with SkyWest and Republic. So I'm very bullish about our opportunity to get E-Jets. It's just really hard to say with things being so dynamic now, when will that be? But the good news is Delta recognizes our value. And I think if you asked most of the leaders at Delta, they would love to have our fleet you know, strong E-jet presence on our fleet, especially for our New York flying.
And just like you said, it's dynamic, that can change at any point. But right now, would you say it's safe that we want to see the restoration of the full CRJ complement before moving into that additional fleet type?
I would say that's the most likely scenario, is our plan to unpark the aircraft we have and get them ready for flying. It's probably the most economical flying for us and for Delta. But with the industry being so dynamic, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw other opportunities. And that's sort of the challenge for Delta Connection will be, how do they rationalize the growth out of the kind of post-COVID getting back to 325? So again, the best guess plan is we'll get our 141 CRJs back in the air, and then we'll look to get an E-jet fleet. But I'm excited because we're actually talking about an E-jet fleet. It's something that's on the radar screen. The momentum around the pilot staffing shortage that we've had in the regional industry is turning, and it will mean we can have these sort of strategic fleet discussions that we haven't been able to have the last couple of years. So I'm super excited. I know that it's probably the number one topic on everyone's mind when we talk into employee groups. They want to know, what's the future of the fleet? What's the future of the E-jets? And so we're excited. Let's get that certificate first, and then let's see where we can go with the fleet.
Well, I always like to joke, when we see the new hire pilots coming in through the door at Endeavor, a lot of them have questions on the E-jet. Back when I was hired in April of 2018, we had heard at that point, well, the E-jets are just around the corner. You know, hiring was kind of built up to that point. And we've seen a little bit of a similar trend with that now, where there was an expectation of some growth before hiring eventually tapered off. I think recently we moved to about 30 new hire pilots a month. We were doing about 40 before that. Still a long ways from that 80 or 90 we saw towards the end of 2021. What does the summer hiring look like for Endeavor when it comes to new first officers coming on property?
So again, very dynamic, dependent on what happens with the industry. And to some degree, as you know, our hiring is mimicking what's going on with all of the majors. And to be honest, what's going on with the low-cost carriers. We've seen quite a bit of slowdown in attrition to low-cost carriers over the past year. And we're seeing a fair amount of slowdown in attrition to the majors as they tend to rationalize their hiring. I know Delta, for example, hired something almost 2,500 in 2023, and they're looking at something probably 1,000 to 1,200 in 2024, right? And so we're expecting similar out of, you know, say United, American, and Southwest. But again, it's so dynamic to what I was talking about with the engines and airframe and the delays by Boeing and the challenges with some of the engines. It seems like everyone's plans keep changing. What that means for us, though, is, again, back to, we want to optimize our FOs to get hours as quick as possible. And if we overhire, then we're going to just dilute the hours available to the first officers. And so I think you'll see, I could guess and tell you what we're going to fly for the summer, but I'm not sure that I have a real good feel whether it'll change or not. Probably your next podcast needs to be with Jay and the team talking about all the dynamicness in the model. I know our plan is to stay steady as best we can and prepare to upgrade and staff the airline as best we can because of that compounding effect to grow the airline, to provide more opportunities, again, build out the network, get more efficient with our network filled out, sort of a win-win for everyone. And so we have a little momentum there. It's like, how do we keep the momentum going while we're keeping an eye on the rest of the industry?
So we talked a little bit on the Endeavor hiring or the unknowns that could happen with Endeavor hiring. Another unknown that our pilots have is what could happen with the flow program as hiring continues at Delta this year. Do you have a little bit more information on that?
I don't have specific information about what Delta is planning to do, other than I know they've pulled back their hiring. And they, again, they are really challenged with aircraft deliveries and understanding the airframe engine world, which could impact their hiring. I don't know what that means, and I'm not sure how much I could impart on where Delta's going. What I do know from the conversations that we've had for Endeavor and Delta is our flow agreement, not only is it kind of the best flow agreement in the industry, but how do we make it bigger, better, stronger, as we get into cap behind it and so forth. How do we make Endeavor the destination of choice and the career choice of a pilot coming out of school to spend time at Endeavor to either, you know, make a career out of working for Endeavor, or if they want to go on to one of the majors, Delta being their key, how do we have the strongest flow program in the country? That's the goal, and that's where, right, where Endeavor and Delta is really positioned to want to move forward with that. What that means in 24, 25, 26, I think we're all going to have to figure that out because of the dynamicness of what's going on in the industry. So again, I don't have, you probably need Russ or Jim to answer some of those questions a little bit more directly. I don't have a lot of knowledge, but the value of our flow program, the quality of our pilots, the value of our training program, and the relationship we have with Delta is by far the strongest in the industry. And how do we leverage that for the future? I'm super interested in maintaining that. And what do we do for that?
With the flow program, we know we're going to have a continued 20 per month going out the door to Delta once those pilots serve their time as a captain. But there's still another question in the forefront of our pilots' minds right now when it comes to the captain retention program, the $110,000 in exchange for doing 24 months in the left seat. Some of those initial pilots are coming up on the end of their commitment here in the next couple months, as well as there's also a gap of pilots who are meeting those requirements continually month after month, but not yet quite in that position where they're going to be flowing up to Delta. This is something that we brought up, I think it's the last two MEC meetings now with the executives between the LEC reps. But at this time, is that something that the company is concerned with, those pilots leaving after the commitment is up from the retention program?
So again, I may not be the best person to talk about it, and you probably, you know, Jim or Russ could talk to a little bit better, but I will tell you the company is concerned about every single pilot that leaves Endeavor. And again, super happy that pilots can find, I mean, I know there's a great career path out there for pilots and encourage that. I wish they were mostly Delta and I wish they were worth waiting for, but I do recognize that some pilots are interested in different careers and looking different ways. The company is very aware of it. The company has been very in tune to the pilot situation for the last 2 years. And I will say the company also takes the decisions on what to do with their programs very seriously. It comes from a place of not only taking care of the company and doing what's right for Endeavor, but also doing right for our employees and what's the right step moving forward. So although I can't answer specifics, I will say the company is quite aware of it, and the company is and will continue to look at what's going on in the industry and should we be making moves or doing things. One of the things I know that, again, when we started me coming back to Endeavor was we have great relationships with our groups. And I know Russ specifically, Jim also done a lot with the ELPA team and the pilots on LOAs and so forth. And so I'm confident that we'll continue to look at opportunities and do things moving forward. I just don't have specifics about, well, are we going to do this or are we going to do that? So need to bring the rest of my teammates in to talk about it in more detail, but definitely aware of it and definitely not taking it lightly.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with that, Brian, where there's been a longstanding, mutually beneficial problem-solving approach that both the MEC and the executive team take to these sorts of problems. I think it's safe to say that if we run into a problem with that come a couple months from now, it'll just be a phone call away to start troubleshooting that. There's some pilots who would want to see a preemptive approach to that or try and getting an agreement in place before we quite hit that critical mass. But I think it's a good reassurance for our pilot group to hear that it's something that your team's aware of and that it's something that we'll look to address if that becomes a problem down the road.
Yeah, so as you can appreciate, through this entire, well, since COVID started, working through COVID and then dealing with a very dynamic regional challenges since then, we meet weekly. We talk about staffing not only pilots, but flight attendants, technicians, dispatchers, and at a very in-depth level. And we've done programs for most of our work groups, and we'll continue to look at all of our work groups to make sure we're taking care of the airline and doing what's right for us and them. And again, the confidence I have that our management team cares about what the work groups have to say and participate in those conversations is very important. It's part of why we have the culture we have And to be honest, I think it's the right way to move forward. And it's been successful for our endeavor for the last 10 or 11 years. I can say we're, in our 11th year now, but it is something that, again, we take very seriously and monitor, I won't say daily, but weekly we are meeting and talking about where things are at and what do we need to do. And obviously even coming to you and solutioning through brainstorming and so forth, I know we've done some of that over the past year too. So it's great to have that relationship where we can do that and find opportunities for us to move forward.
I think for the most part, that covers a lot of the main questions that the MEC had for the execs down in Atlanta at our last MEC meeting. But looking ahead towards 2024, are there any specific challenges or threats on the horizon for Endeavor that you've seen?
So I guess for me, one of the things that I'm extremely passionate about, we talked earlier about momentum around the things we can control, resiliency to the things that we can't control. But if you think back to COVID, since COVID, about 2/3 of our employees are new at Endeavor, right? So if you think it's a pretty big number, and I know like for the Delta and American and United, they're about half that. And so we've definitely seen a turnover in our work groups at quite a level. Luckily at the management ranks, it's not been quite as high. But for me, one of the key things is, as we talked about the momentum at the beginning, running the airline like we used to, well, let's not forget that we have a lot of new people, a lot of new positions. We have stellar training in flight ops. We have great training in in-flight dispatch technicians. But even our management ranks have turned over quite a bit. And so I'm super passionate about what we're doing to invest in leadership training across the company. We've done a lot in 23 with the tech ops leadership, where we've this really big matrix defining what it means to be a leader, what it means to be a manager at Endeavor. And we're rolling out some of those concepts, not only to the VPs, directors, but also to the in-flight ops leadership teams and our teams out of our airports. And so making sure that our teams, no matter what position you're in, no matter what role you have at Endeavor, you have the tools to do your job effectively for the good of everyone. And so I'm super excited about the soft side, even though I'm the ops guy, the soft side of what does it mean to maintain our culture and the strength that is Endeavor, because I think we can do even better than we've done. And that, especially that resiliency through the summer, how do we get better at resetting the airline and taking care of our crews, taking care of our employees, downstairs in the OCC, and, changing the crew scheduling team to crew services, right? And focused on what does that mean and how can we take care of each other? It's a big passion of mine. And I know the management team, we're all kind of excited about some of the concepts we're talking about of moving the airline forward rather than just doing it the same old way we used to do it. So it's a great time as we went through the COVID transition to kind of reassess, retrain, and then reestablish ourselves as an airline. So not necessarily a threat, but I think a huge opportunity for us as we think about the next couple of years. How do we run this airline really good? Not for the sake of our customers, but for the sake of all of our employees.
Well, that covers a lot of our key concerns coming out of the MEC meeting and going into 2024 as a whole. From a leadership side, we have a lot more frequent interactions with your team across the highway over at Sea Tower. But I always think it's important to get that direct communication to the pilot group, not only from the MEC side, but to be able to get those answers from our pilots, from our crews out on the line, directly from your team. So I want to say thank you, Brian, for taking the time to sit down this morning and cover those topics with us today.
And thank you, Adam, and the team for allowing me to come in and talk a little bit about the operations. Hopefully you get a sense for the passion I have for Endeavor as I've come back and the trying to do what's right for Endeavor and the future for Endeavor while taking care of all of our employees. I want to thank you personally for the leadership you've provided and the working relationship we've had for the last couple of years. I know Russ, I know Jim, I know the rest of the team really appreciates the relationship. I know there's this attitude of we can figure it out, we can solve it, let's find a way. And that's not always the case with all of relationships. So again, super appreciative of the team and how well the airline has done over the last couple of years. And so hopefully we can keep the momentum going.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great to hear that continuing affirmation that your team's looking out for our pilots out on the line day to day. Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thanks for listening to another On Air with the Chair. Fly safe, be safe, and we'll see you out on the line. Thanks, everyone.
Endeavor 5531, runway 28, clear to land.